Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast. This is Paul here, and we have the continuation of our interview with Roger German about his book on basement refinishing or remodeling. We are happy to have Roger with us, and he was willing to call the Handy Guys, and we were able to have a good hour-long discussion with him. We've broken it up into two parts. Hopefully, you've already heard the first part of the interview, and on this show, we will have the second part. Before we get to that, let's give out our contact information. You can reach us at us@handyguyspodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments, you can also reach us on our website. You can Google Handy Guys Podcast, and you'll find us. We have a contact link on the top. Send us a link, send us some information, ask us a question, and we'll try to get to it in one of our shows. Next week, we will be answering a lot of our listeners' questions, several of them. In addition, we will also be dealing with the building of a trellis in a garden. So if you are interested in building a simple wood project, a trellis for your garden, you need to check out our show next week, where Brian will be uploading the plans and the photos of his trellis project. For now, let's continue our conversation with Roger German, author of Remodeling Basements from Taunton Press. In this conversation, we talk about the extras, the extra add-ons you can put in your basement. In addition, we also talk about lighting, your ceiling choices, and heating options. And don't forget to check out Roger's book from Taunton Press. It's on our website. You can't go wrong with this great book about basement remodeling.
What? Tell me about add-ons. What do you like for add-ons for basements? What have you seen? What are some cool things?
I'm really fond of fireplaces. I love fireplaces. They aren't very practical, but you can get some really good fireplaces now that actually add heat, you know, to your basement, either fireplaces or the stove.
That's exactly what I did. I put in a gas-fired stove to heat my basement, and I didn't extend the HVAC system down.
I would bet that when you kick that baby on, it heats it pretty well.
Yeah, it's 28,000 BTUs or something like that, and it's got a thermostat on the wall and the whole nine yards, so it works great.
And it looks amazing, like a wood stove or something.
It's fun. There's something about that fireplace that's just nice to have going.
I won't tell you the story about how Brian had to go into the plumber supply to get, what is it called, the pipe you need?
The CSST, the corrugated stainless steel flexible tubing.
And they would only sell it to plumbing contractors. Because you have to have proper training to make the connections, but let's just say Brian is—he's relentless.
He's also properly trained now, apparently.
I am now.
He read every piece of documentation he could find on it. So.
Well, and the other thing, I put in some saunas. Those are kind of cool. It's much easier to deal with a dry sauna because you don't have anytime you go with a moist sauna, you got a lot of moisture problems. But
sure.
Typically, you're not using it that much, but those are fun. I put in a wine cellar, which with a humidity in it, so they could get exactly the right temperature.
Nice.
And I put in a cigar room for a guy, where he kept it was all cool. Humidor.
That's what I need.
Keep it at exactly right. Yeah.
All right. When are you coming to Pennsylvania?
Yeah. There you go. Very fun. That was one of the fun things.
Is your band touring anywhere on the East Coast?
Yes. Actually, I was talking to my son, who lives in Brooklyn there, last night. And I want to get out this summer sometime, because I want to get up to Taunton and talk to Helen again about it, the book idea. But I also want to spend some time with my son and his wife out there. But that's not that far from the city.
Cool.
That'd be kind of
What instrument do you play?
I play guitar, acoustic guitar.
Nice.
I play the coffee house. I do the old 70s folk rock, like Cat Stevens, Gordon Lightfoot, Jim Croce, and some of my own stuff.
Nice. Let's see, what other questions do we have here, Brian? While we got you on the phone, lighting. Tell us about some lighting options. It used to be, I know in the old days, besides paneling, you probably put in fluorescent lighting, but now it seems like we're seeing a lot more.
Yeah. And that's pretty much a whole other topic, these fluorescent lights, the ones people are replacing their bulbs with. And I always ask the suppliers, I said, now what are we supposed to do with these things? Because they've got, you know, mercury in them.
Right. Good question.
And nobody has any real answers. Well, you just can't put them in the dump. I said, well, okay. So they burn out. They last longer, but they do burn out. And then, you know, you get, all of a sudden you get millions of people putting these in the trash and it shows up.
Right.
Like, what? Well, you're not supposed to put them in a landfill. Okay, well, what do we do with them? Well, we haven't figured that out yet. Okay,
yeah. That's cool. Or you have a child that breaks one in your house. And
that's right.
I've heard of stories of someone calling, like, their Departmental of Environmental Protection and asking what they're supposed to do, and they didn't know, you know?
Yeah,
and
before you know it, team,
yeah, before you know it, you got a hazmat team arriving, you
know? That's right. They get in the it looks like something from E.T.
Right.
Well, typically in bases, a lot of people still really like to use the can lights, the recessed lighting, because it, you know, it doesn't hang down. You can do a lot with it. You can several in, so you can get ambient lighting. You can also put them in specific locations to get spot lighting. You can get ones that will turn and give, you know, the wash walls. They'll do that kind of stuff. A lot of that.
Now,
if you're putting in a bar.
How about, I interrupted you on your lighting, but tie that into ceiling choices, drop ceiling or drywall?
I like drywall, and there's two reasons I do. One is because it's only half an inch thick, so you're tight against the joist. You get a little more headroom. If you have the room to do it, a drop ceiling typically requires at least 3 inches to be able to get panels in and out of it. Now, there's a new type of, well, it was new maybe a year and a half ago, because one of my students showed up with it, and we tried it, where you actually attach the channels directly to the joist, and you bend them back and forth to get the panels, the drop-in panels in. And it worked fairly well.
It seems like the problem with that is if your joists aren't exactly level. And
yeah,
you know.
Right. Yeah, you have to do some shimmy.
Right.
For me, it's more of an aesthetic thing. And I think for most of my people in my class, I mean, they tend to equate suspended ceilings with commercial projects. And when you come into a basement that's got all that suspended ceiling, more people think residents when they see drywall than they do when they see suspended ceiling.
Sure.
I think typically more of an aesthetic. But also in most basements, you know, you've got a ceiling height from floor joists of about 7'10", maybe 7'9". If you take 3 inches out of there, you're getting to 7'6", you're starting to drop that ceiling height to where it may not be less comfortable. And now, a lot of people, when they build houses now, they'll put an extra row block or two so they can get it an 8-foot or an 8-foot-6 ceiling. Then that's not an issue. And even then, it's, you know, a suspended ceiling probably makes more sense if you want to do that. So it's really just, and some of these drop-in tiles now are gorgeous. And you can go 2x2s and have some really funky stuff. So, but
yeah,
you're not going to pay money with it that way.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's going to be a lot more expensive for a drop ceiling versus drywall.
If you go with the classier drop-in panels, you can get the less expensive ones, which will keep the price down, but, you know, they will tend to sag after just
right.
You
Yeah, I will say, I was going to do the drop ceiling because I like having access to utilities. I've had enough problems in the past with, you know, leaky toilets and other things, but...
Yep.
And Brian was telling me, go with the drywall. And what convinced me is when I realized the price of a decent drop ceiling, I'm like, okay, it's drywall.
What does it really cost to make a drywall patch? Not that much, so
right.
Not too bad.
That's what Brian says. He says, no problem. You just cut it out, put in, you know, but then you got to repaint the entire ceiling. And
well, there is that. That's true. Usually happens with drop ceilings, though, for people. They don't have a problem for about 5 or 6 years. And then they can't find that box tile.
Right.
So they go to look for replacement ones, and they aren't quite the same shade anymore. Maybe they just stick a lot. And it's like, or the, you know, the holes don't quite look the same, and so it's just like, looks like a drywall patch because the panel doesn't match. So anyway, there are problems with both ways, but most of the people that I remodel with tend to go with drywall. I think it just tends to blend in with the rest of the house more. So.
Yeah, I think that was kind of our conclusion as well. You know, one of the goals, I think, when you're finishing a basement should be to, you know, have a similar look and feel as the rest of the house and not look like
right.
It's been tacked on.
Yeah, that's right. You know, one of the other things that I didn't want to get too far away from was you talked about the heating. One of the things that I can basements. Heat as a backup heating is radiant heat. And, you know, people usually can't afford to redo their floor, so you can get radiant flow. We've done that as a basement where we've actually torn out the floor, put in that hot water or heat. And that is amazing. That is the absolute best way to do a basement. It's great because everything's warm at that point.
Yeah. And in fact, I would think that, radiant heating is the best way to heat any, every floor. In fact, I came from a 100-year-old house where it was all radiator, hot water heat, and moved to almost a brand new house with forced air. And, we're okay with the forced air now since it's clean and new. But, boy, I'll tell you, hot water heat's the way to go. And if you can get it in the floor, that's just the best.
Interesting. I was raised in a house that had hot water heat also. It was actually steam originally, and my dad converted the boiler to just hot water.
Uh-huh.
It bangs occasionally, but... You know, you don't have blowers kicking on and off.
Right.
You don't hear that. It's just there. I really like it. I think we kind of missed the boat on that. It was just cheap and the way to go.
Yeah, I looked at doing that as a way to heat my basement, and it was just too cost prohibitive to retrofit into a house with a forced air system. You know, it would have been a boiler, and because I didn't want to bust up the floor, it would have been baseboard hot water. And it just would have been a nightmare.
Now, one of the things that I did do in my basement, and I've done in other basements, they have these radiant, they call them, they're a cove radiant heater. It fits up along near the ceiling, and it's just a little triangular track. It's like, when they talk about radiant heat, they talk about it being like on a sunny day, if you're out in the under a tree and it's shady, it's the same temperature around everywhere. But if you walk out in the sun, all of a sudden you feel warm because you have that warming effect.
Sure.
That's what radiant heat does. So these cold heaters you put up in the ceiling, you don't really notice them. But when they're on, it doesn't like warm air, but if you're sitting down, it warms you, and it warms the chair, and it warms the floor, it warms objects in the room. So in my basement, you know, the air may feel a little cool down there, but if I've got the cold heater on, I may go down there with a sweater, and after I've been sitting there for a while, I'll take the sweater off because all of a sudden it feels warm again.
Are those really electric or hot water?
Electric.
Okay.
And they're pretty easy. They're not expensive. They're pretty easy to install, especially easy if you pre-wired for them. But they're unobtrusive because they're not down behind your couch. They're not something you got to wrestle with against the floor somewhere. They're just kind of up out of the way. And they're, usually in some nondescript beige or white or some kind of color like that. They have a little screen that goes on the front of it, so you don't really see them. But I like them, especially for, if you're doing a basement where you've got a rec room, well, you don't need a lot of heat there, really. But if you're going to have an area where you're going to be sitting watching TV or reading or knitting or whatever, you want some additional heat in there, and the forced air just isn't going to quite cut it properly. That's where I'll put some of that cold heat.
That's interesting you say that, because it was funny, because my basement was primarily going to be a playroom for my kids who are going to be run. I could care less. They're going to be running around. I don't really care if it's 63 degrees down there. I don't really need to heat it, but I still had to do it as per code, get all the correct BTUs, make sure I sized everything. But one of the interesting things I've read about in the last few years, and perhaps with the cost of corn going up so much, maybe it's not a good idea anymore, is that you find people experimenting with corn stoves to heat?
Yeah, I've not used one. There's some here in Nebraska. We do have a lot of corn. We don't have a lot here, but we have corn.
farmers that are making good money, right?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, one of my brother-in-laws is farming, and corn is at a, it's interesting. The price of corn hasn't varied from what the farmer got from about the 1940s until the last few years.
Sure.
About $2.50 a bushel, now it's up around $4. So, yeah, they're pretty happy. So, anyhow, we got away from our lighting. So,
okay, sorry about that.
Back, I do a lot of can lighting, or the recessed can lighting. It's pretty easy to do when you're redoing rooms. The other thing sometimes that I'll do that I'll incorporate with a soffit to make a soffit look like it's more than just covering up pipes and stuff is you can put a kind of a little shelf extension out with a little like a board or a drywall lift in front of it. So you have a little valence light, and drop a valence light behind that, so it gives you ambient lighting up on the ceiling. You don't really see it, but it's just ambient light. That's kind of a fun thing to do, if I described that so it was understandable.
Yeah, no, that sounds good.
A little valence, and you can do that kind of almost anywhere. That's kind of nice light.
You're listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Yeah, one of the things that I wish I had done when I did the electrical plan for my basement was to do some sconces or do some valance lighting or some kind of,
you know,
in my, I basically just did three rooms. I left it all open.
Yeah.
And, you know, one room has, you know, eight cans in the ceiling. That was all I did. And I wish I got a little more creative. And the other thing I wish I would have done, and I encouraged Paul to do this, and I think he did, was make sure you have switches at the top of the stairs for every single light in the basement. Code requires that you have the light above the stairs, of course, controllable at the top and the bottom, right? But I had a couple of lighting zones in other rooms in the basement, if you will, further away. And, of course, the kids leave the lights on.
That's a good
so,
idea.
So I you know, so now I got to chase the kids down the basement to go turn the lights out, right? Whereas I could have just put us, you know, another control point at the top of the stairs.
I got that one right, though. I can control them all from the top of the steps.
You know, and the sconce lighting is nice. That can, there's some pretty attractive sconce lighting, which is kind of fun to do. And that does really make a little more element statement in some basement.
Sure.
So it's fun.
All right. Well, just a couple other little questions about your book. First of all, is this you on the pictures in this book?
Yeah, that's me. We couldn't afford a model, so I had to be the model.
That's what I was going to... I didn't know if it was you or a high-priced model. And the other question is...
It was a very low-priced model, actually.
And Brian was looking through it, and my copy of the book, which is now, like, been, I don't know, got wet somehow, so it's in pretty bad shape. But
see, that's what's great about that. That's what it should look like when you're doing
it. I've got notes in it. And he noticed one note of mine where I had circled. I noticed a little mistake in the book. Have you ever noticed that you have a little mistake in there?
You only noticed one?
Well,
I noticed one, but we won't talk about that.
You probably did. I only noticed one. It was in one page. You say something like, I use 2.5-inch nails for the studs, and another one you say I use 3-inch nails or something like that.
I might have been thinking of a band. Well, that was 9-inch nails. That's right.
It's on page 61. And anyway, I thought that was just kind of funny. It was no big deal.
Page 61. No, I appreciate that because we're redoing it. I'll try to on page 61.
Let's
I'll
see.
That.
On page 61, on the right hand side, you have a little framing fastener section. You say for framing, you'll need 3-inch nails. You didn't say I use it. You say you'll need 3-inch nails. And, for framing, but then on page 64 you say I use 2.5-inch nails.
That's all the confusing stash. I'll check that out.
I thought that was funny. So,
Paul, we're not here to give our guests a hard time.
No,
right?
I'm so crushed.
I just thought that was kind of humorous, actually. But it's a great book. Actually, I recommend it to any of our listeners. It was really helpful because you have good pictures and you have good information. So
what I find happens every time I teach a class, I learn something. So I always find that valuable. And I talk in my class. I say, you know, if I'm ever, because it's really easy to get into, you know, the jargon of construction and not even know that I'm doing that. So I like people to call me on it. But also, people are often bringing me new products or new ideas that I haven't heard of before. Because the internet's got so much stuff on it. Oh, I never heard of that before, so
sure.
Let's try that. It's kind of like that stealing stuff we put up, and I had never even heard of that before.
Right.
And another thing that somebody brought out just the last class that I hadn't seen was that flooring they put down is plywood, but it has like little rubber feet on it, so it's above the moisture.
Yeah, it's Dry Core is the brand name on that.
There you go. And it seems expensive for what it does. I think you need to solve the moisture problem first.
Exactly.
Then you don't need that. But interesting idea. One other little note here that for me the go no go for people is, you know, you got to solve the moisture problem before you start working with your basement. Don't start remodeling until you're not having water come. You know, you got that figured out.
Sure.
And keep the plants away from the house. You know, a couple feet. Don't be planting right up against the house because you're watering those plants and you're just water running right down.
That's right. You got to make sure you maintain your grades, make sure you maintain your gutters, your downspouts extend out. You know, there's a whole host of things that, you know, you can do to help mitigate that moisture coming in.
You got to watch, people have to use their sprinkler systems all the time, and sometimes those sprinkler systems will be running water, right up against the side of the house, and you got thousands of gallons of water that's just running right down that foundation. It's got to go through some system or somewhere.
Yeah, I know a guy who, he said, Brian, I'm never going to be able to finish my basement because when it rains, my sump pump runs continuously. And he had two of them, two pits in two corners of his basement. And they did. They would run, he'd get just a little bit of a downpour and they'd just start running. They wouldn't stop. And his basement sometimes still flooded. And I looked at where it was pumping out just a foot away from the foundation. Essentially, it was just recirculating the water continuously.
And I said, this may help.
Yeah, I said, you need to write. So he eventually trenched it out to the street. It was about 60 or 80 foot out, and his basement was bone dry ever since. And
that's so great. You know, when I bought my house over my first house, one of the easiest things I ever did that I never thought would, we bought it because my wife and I were first married. We didn't have any money. It was cheap. But the water was coming in that basement. So the first thing I did was brought in a couple loads of dirt, and I just banged it up alongside the house all the way around, spread it around. I thought, okay, that'll at least help me start. And I put some window wells in, so I raised the grade a bit. I was in that house for 15 years, never had water after that. And that's how simple it was for me in that particular case.
Right.
It was just, I got the water away from the house, and it didn't leak anymore. Got the graded away from the house. I mean, everybody says that, but especially in a new house, that 2 foot of overdig that most houses are built with, over a period of the next 3 to 5 years, that's going to keep settling. And a lot of houses will have a negative grade, from feet back to the house. It's like, bring in some dirt. Bring in 6 inches of dirt. Fill it in up so you got a nice grade away from your house. And that's pretty important. So that's a primary thing to tell people when they've got to finish your basement. Make sure they don't have water coming in.
So. Yeah. On one of our previous shows, I described to the folks that listen what I did when I built my house, and that was maybe a little bit overkill, but it led to a bone-dry basement. I mean, outside, I have a down at the footing, I have a perimeter French drain. I also have a secondary drain for all of the downspouts and gutters go into it, and that all flows into a dry well that's 30 foot behind the house that has an overflow to daylight. And also interior perimeter French drain and sump pump. So, and then
lots of water problems around here.
And then the water coating on the foundation.
Especially, this was a new house, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see that? If you're building new, anytime when I build a new house, I always put in that sump pump system and that drain system around inside and out. It's so cheap to do then.
Yep.
It's so expensive to do later. It sure makes sense to do it.
Yeah. Right.
Always.
Well, Roger, we appreciate you taking this time to call in.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. You guys are great to talk to.
Well, that's all we have of our interview with Roger German. That's all we have for basements.
That's right. Now, if you have any other questions about basements or comments about anything that we've talked about, feel free to give us a call or contact us on our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com.
And if you want to learn to build a trellis, you better wait till next week's episode and download it or go to our website because we're going to teach you how.
That's right. And we also have a bunch of questions from listeners that we've been neglecting, so we'll address some of those next week as well.
See you then.